Sometimes we see things all the time but never really focus in on them or ask questions about them. Well, when John Freiberger suggested today's topic, I realized that I had never really thought much about stucco. Well, we're going to think about stucco today. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, we're going to start out talking about the history and care of traditional stucco. We'll also find out how materials made to look like stucco compare. John Freiberger is a Wisconsin registered home inspector who specializes in the evaluation of older structures. He's the founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. John, always great to have you by.
Very glad to be here.
And Ken Adams is the owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. He and John have been doing these programs together for quite a few years.
It's good to see you again.
I'm not sure how many years you've been doing it.
Well, it's in the double digits, I know. So.
Aren't we all? Well, we will welcome your calls with your questions and comments about not only stucco, but all kinds of home repair and improvement as well at 1-800-642-1234. You can also post a question or comment on our Facebook page or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, John, how long has stucco as a building material been around?
Well, it probably has been around just about the time people moved out of the caves.
Wow.
And they built a little round hut out of branches, and then they found out if they rub mud on it, it stayed a whole lot warmer and it kept the wind out. So stucco is probably, next to stone and wood, is our oldest building material. It was widely used throughout the Mediterranean world. The Romans even had a cement-type stucco, and many of the Roman buildings that appear to have beautiful stonework are actually stucco with grooves put into them so that they look like stone. Part of the Colosseum was even stuccoed.
I was just in Rome a couple of weeks ago, and it's phenomenal to see the level of engineering and architecture and just knowledge of building materials that the Romans had.
It really is. There are many things that we had to rediscover after the Dark Ages, such as the use of concrete. Mm-hmm. Because the Romans also knew how to use concrete. And, of course, they were pouring cheap concrete, and they had to make it look like something. And that's pretty much what happened in the United States. We built some buildings. We wanted them to look better, so we could take a wood frame building, put some lath on it, stucco it, put lines in it, and make it look like a stone structure.
Now, when I think of colonial buildings, I think of wood buildings. When did stucco become really popular in the U.S.?
Well, stucco was used at the very earliest days. Mm-hmm. When the Pilgrims arrived here and when the founders of Jamestown arrived, they used stucco. Now, they used it in the English manner. So they had houses that were timber frame houses, but then they infilled between the timbers, usually with rushes. It was called wattle, basically sticks. And then they took mud and later lime plaster, and they plastered over. So if you go to Old World Wisconsin, you'll see some buildings like this, including a German farmhouse there. So it was not just the English, but also the German tradition. So all over Europe, we were building half-timbered buildings, and we were using stucco as infill in between. That then came to the United States. Again, just like the people moving out of the cave, it was readily available, it was cheap, and it kept the wind out.
And Ken, are there certain building styles that make use of it more than others that we see commonly in the U.S.?
Well, that's a real very good question, because you see that in all types of styles. You see it a lot in craftsman-style homes. You see it in you'll see it in Lake Queen Anne's. Sometimes they'll be used selectively around foundations where you'll see, most of your listeners have seen little pebbles in the foundation work, and that's one form of adding something to a stucco finish on the outside of a concrete foundation just to give it a little more interest.
And John, you were saying that it was popular at first because it was readily available, but it seems like its popularity has continued, so there must be something else that makes it really desirable.
The great thing about a stucco wall is that it doesn't let the wind in. So if you think of a clapboard house in the old days, all you had was you had the studs, you had some sheathing, which of course had holes in it, you had maybe some tar paper, maybe not, and then you had the clapboards. And when the wind really pushed on that wall, it found its way into the house. Well, the stucco gave you a complete envelope. We'd move back into the cave, hadn't we? We'd surrounded our house with an artificial rock that the wind could not blow through.
But traditionally, it's been one of the less expensive ways to side a house if you were looking for something that looks very elegant. If you want to, as you had mentioned before, you want to do brick or you want to do stonework, but you find it cost prohibitive, you know, so stucco is, most of the materials are readily available even today. And so comparatively speaking, it's less expensive than doing stone or brick.
That's true, Ken. More true in the 18th century, where many people wanted a stone house but couldn't afford it. So stucco was widely used. Once we get into the Midwest and we get the revival styles, I mean, think of all the Tudor revival that we have in Green Bay and Appleton and Madison and Milwaukee. And there we have stucco that is put on for an aesthetic purpose. Mm-hmm. That stuff started getting a little bit more expensive. Mm.
Okay. And so talking about Wisconsin and stucco in Wisconsin, you mentioned partly that the people that immigrated here, it was the way they built at home. But we have also, I think, overall, more extreme weather here, maybe hotter summers, colder winters. Does stucco stand up well to those weather extremes?
Generally, I tell people if they have a stucco house that you should be able to get 100 years out of a good stucco coating.
Mm-hmm.
Because stucco does shed water. It is relatively impermeable. A lot of it, however, depends upon the maintenance. And generally, when Ken and I see houses where we have to give people bad news, that is 30% of your stucco or 40% of it is shot, so you may as well replace it, it's generally due to one of two problems. Well, no, it really is a one problem. It's bad maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And part of bad maintenance is bad repairs. Mm. And one reason we wanted to talk about today is I've been involved the last couple of months in several houses where basically the houses weren't in bad shape until somebody fixed them.
Hmm. So it went from not so bad to bad.
Right. What we don't want to do with stucco is we do not want to put in materials that don't work. And we've talked a lot about this when we've talked about masonry, that we can't take these old bricks and soft stone houses and put in hard Portland cement. It's the same thing with stucco. You put a really hard, immovable patch in the middle of a soft lime-based stucco, all you're going to end up with is more cracking and more movement and a quicker failure. So it's important that people who have these houses realize that there are correct ways of repairing them.
Well, and you said that many of those repairs are made necessary because of poor maintenance. So why don't we start there? What is the regular maintenance that stucco needs?
Well, that's interesting because in the old days, there was one way of maintaining it. Now there's a new way. The old stucco always had lime in it. Well, even replacement stucco still has lime in it, so it was soft. And way back when, most paints were lime-based. We remember whitewash in the old dairy barns in Wisconsin, and there's the calcimine paint that we sometimes see in interiors where it was basically a calcium-based paint that was applied to interior walls. The proper way to maintain a stucco house was to basically put a lime paint over it every few years. What the lime did is it actually went right into the stucco. So if there was some erosion going on, it simply went in and fortified it. It's sort of like, you know, drinking milk mm-hmm. for strong bones.
And so it absorbed it because you said stucco is actually a soft, rather porous material.
It's soft and porous, and the lime would go in and would bond to the lime and the sand. And if people kept up on that, those houses probably could have gone almost forever, unless water got in around penetrations or something like that. But what we did is we painted the houses. And once we started painting houses, we started developing problems with the stucco.
And you mean painting houses with oil-based paints and non-compatible finishes, basically.
That's correct, Ken. Yeah, we put on things that didn't breathe very well. And many of the houses we see now are actually dying from the inside. What a house with metal lath will last just about forever if the water can't get to it. But if we have vapor dry from the interior and we're actually condensing water inside the walls of the house, and that is then getting on the lath, that lath will rust. As it rusts, it expands, and it actually pops the stucco loose. And because these walls can't breathe, once we get so many layers of paint on the exterior, what we see is a lot of damage, not from exterior moisture, but from interior moisture.
Hmm. Well, we can back up just a little bit.
Sure.
There's a lot of different types of stucco, as we call it, but really they can be sort of broken down into three main categories. There's traditional natural cement stucco, which is basically sand and lime and a few other ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Portland cement-based stucco, which is Portland cement-based, but also has a little lime in it. And then there's another product out there called EFIS, which is, help me, John. It's
Exterior Insulation Finish System.
Right. Thank you. And that's a man-made product. And so when you're looking at a stucco house, if you own a stucco house, you want to decide, first of all, which one of those products it is. So if it's 150 years old, it's a no-brainer. It's going to be a lime-based cementitious finish. If it's anywhere from the 1890s to the 1950s, it could go either way, mm-hmm. because there were a lot of contractors.
Kind of a transitional period.
Exactly. And so that's where we see a lot of problems with people that are taking, as John was saying, taking a Portland cement patch over a lime original mm-hmm. stucco finish. And so if you determine which one it is, and then if it's EFIS, as we call it, or EFIS, or exterior insulation finishing system, that's a whole different problem or a whole different set of issues on it. So step one, find out what you have. Step two, find out how bad the problem is. Step three is to find out what's causing the problem originally. So if it's just a crack in the wall, it's different than if there's a big section of the wall that's coming off.
Okay.
Off the substrate.
And so you said that part of the way you can determine is the time that when the house was built, so that traditional stucco formula is not used currently anymore?
Oh, it is.
It is.
Oh,
okay.
Yes. John had mentioned the old-fashioned stucco work that was done in Italy. And you see it if you were in Italy, did you tour Pompeii? You could see some of the stucco finishes still over the top of their brick, which was a common thing that they did back then. That's basically, in very simple terms, it's like marble dust mixed with lime that's been, I think they cook the lime, don't they, to modify it. So, and they call, what do they call it, John? Hydrated lime?
It's a hydrated
lime. Hydrated lime. And that's basically it, and that makes an absolutely beautiful finish. I mean, we all try to do faux paint jobs to make it, but you could still do that. You could still get the products. It's great. You can, it could be waterproofed with beeswax or paraffin wax, or other additives can be put in, even epoxies to mm-hmm. make it adhere to areas that it wouldn't traditionally have been doable. So yeah, it's all out there.
Okay. And the exterior insulation finish systems, does that last as long as that traditional stucco, John?
Well, Ken and I were talking about this earlier. Generally, if I look at a house built in the 80s that has it, we simply say to the people, tear it all off. Then repair the rot inside your walls and start over with something different. It was a system that was developed in Europe, I think mostly in Germany. And it was developed to go over masonry buildings. So
after the war.
The war. So let's say you've got a poured concrete building and the insulation is non-existent. Well, so you glue some insulation on the exterior and put an acrylic stucco finish over it. That really works well. The problem is when we put it over wood frame buildings in Wisconsin and we get any water in back of this acrylic system that doesn't breathe, it simply rots the walls. I'm working on one right now in Shoreward where the house was built in 2007. And there are places where two-thirds of the 2x6s in the walls are simply gone.
It's terrible.
We started putting it on. We put it on in the 80s and the 90s without proper detailing. We then developed more or less decent detailing, but then we didn't bother to train the crews to do it.
Well, a lot of times I think people go out and they're trying to get the job done, so they cut corners. And the worst place to cut corners is on the outside shell of a building,
right.
And it really shows in EFIS.
It's absolutely essential with an exterior insulation finish system to have a system that is back drained so water can get out of the wall and air can get in. And those systems are getting better. Dryvit has one. Most of the manufacturers have them. People can go online and look at them. But what we're finding is people are still having a terrible time installing them. Hmm. It takes a lot of skill to do it correctly. So if you are thinking about building a house with that system, make sure that people download, as we always say, go to the site, use the web, download the installation instructions and watch the crew as they put it up and make sure that if the water gets into that wall, it can get out so it doesn't rot your house.
You could also hire someone like John to go and to inspect it as they go along, because the building inspection department has certain criteria, but not to the detail that is required by the manufacturer.
Oh, great point.
That's correct. And there actually are certified exterior insulation finish inspectors where you have to take a course, and then you are considered to be competent by the industry to go out and look at their products.
You get that big stamp of EFIS on your forehead, right, John?
We are talking with John Freiberger and Ken Adams, talking about home improvement and repair. They're happy to answer your questions when you join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Carol Christensen, our on-air producer. Let's go first to Kathleen in Delavan. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I've been waiting about 2+ years to see if you guys would ever have a problem like this, and I've given up. So it's not stucco.
That's okay.
I have an old fishing cottage that was gradually added on to, and I didn't find out until the day before the purchase that it really had no foundation. Mm-hmm. It's just on beams, which seem to be all right so far, but I'm not sure if that's another call when I'll find out if I need to do anything for a foundation around it. But the problem is, the addition, the floor is kind of collapsing, and it was kind of minor when I moved in, and I had somebody put down like a concrete fill-in thing and then put plywood over it, and that's now all collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
And
you mean like a floor leveling compound?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so I've talked to a couple people, and it seems like down here I can't find anybody who even has an idea what to do, and I call the foundation person, and they don't even call me back. I think it needs like those floor support joists with a beam underneath to push it up. Would that be right?
Well, it's possible. Is it sinking in the middle of the floor, or is it sinking where the posts are?
It's sinking on the side. I don't know what's under there, because it's like 35 feet from where the crawl space entrance is, and you literally have to crawl.
I see.
So and there's no barrier down there. You know, there's nothing.
So you need to get your son or your husband to crawl in there before the
daughter.
Well, I was thinking it's a kind of a boy's job, you know, ugly,
right,
dusty.
I look for skinny handymen. And
there you go.
But they all kind of disappear. It's kind of difficult here.
Well, here's the thing, Kathleen. If the floor is sinking in the middle, if it's got a big belly in it in the middle, it's kind of concaved, then that means that the floor structure is inadequately sized. In that case, there's one fix. There is something, like you had said, maybe you put a beam across, but then you need to support that beam on something, which would be posts set down to the frost line. If it's sinking over the top of the posts, if the posts themselves are moving, that means that they weren't actually installed to the frost line to begin with, or they're rotting away, and which is probably more likely, in an old fishing cottage. Then you need a different fix, and that's to dig out and replace those posts with something that's going to go down to the frost line. So the first thing to do is do a little investigating. Is there anything you want to add, John? It's just a lot of grunt work.
Well, investigation is really the key. Yeah. And sometimes we know that we are not going to do the repair by crawling 35 feet. So let's make a hole in the side.
Yeah, that's
And then we've got an inspection hole, and we know we can then get the contractors in there as well. You could, Kathleen, check with the home inspection firms in your area and see if you can find someone who has the skills to really analyze this. Have somebody make an opening for them so they can go down and look for decay. They can take some pictures, take some measurements. If that doesn't work, the best course is to talk to either a Wisconsin-licensed professional engineer with structural experience or a local architect. Hmm. But a home inspector, if you can find the right person, many of them are quite knowledgeable. And, of course, if they're working around Delavan, they're working around your lake and the neighboring lakes, and they may have seen these issues before.
And then one other quick question. That needs to be ventilated down there because it's very humid in the summer, mm-hmm. and I was going to put a fan into, you know, on the outside wall, just put it through to down below, and then just draw the air out. Would that work?
Well, with a couple quick questions. What is your skirting around the building underneath the floor joists? What material is it?
It's siding over the beams that the place is resting on.
Okay, well, you might get away with just putting some ventilation screens. Oh, you cut a little hole, in one in each side of the building, and put a vent cover over the top of it, and that might give you just enough circulation to wick away the excess moisture.
What size of a hole are you talking about, Ken?
I don't know how big the building is, but I would say just off the top of my head, like a 6x14 or something like that. Okay. The other thing you want to do is, what's the ground underneath? Is that just dirt or is it some?
Mm-hmm. I know there's no barrier.
Yeah, you really should have a vapor barrier on the ground, and it should be very nice and tight, so that you're not getting a lot of moisture up through the ground into the crawl space area. So that's another bit of work. Sorry, there's no easy answer for it, but
I guess I'll just have to make a big hole in the floor, and everything will have to go through there, and then they'll have to rebuild the floor or something.
There's nothing wrong with that. If you can't go through the skirting, and if you can't justify crawling 35 feet into a little catacomb underneath your, maybe you'll find Jimmy Hoffa. Who knows?
Well, thanks for that call, Kathleen, and good luck with those issues. Let's go next to Viroqua and Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning. Although the normal recommendation is to have a tight, impermeable vapor barrier on the warm side of the house, I've got a couple of projects where we've re-insulated the roof with a hot roof system where I've got 4 inches of polystyrene foam, ice and water shield, and metal roof on the top. And my goal is so there's no opportunity for this section to breathe to the exterior. And my goal is to allow it to breathe to the interior since I've got all this insulation on the outside. Although there are numerous paint manufacturers who will tell you they have a vapor impermeable paint, a vapor barrier paint, I can't get any information on permeable paints. The interior surfaces are our sheetrock at presently taped and well sealed, so there's no air movement through there. But I want to put a paint on there that will allow this section to breathe to the interior to allow any moisture that is in there to equilibrate with the interior surfaces.
Okay, let's see what the guys have to say. John?
Well, I would probably check with Sherman Williams first if you haven't gone to them already, Tom. They seem to have pretty good tech support. Now, Ken, I'm probably going to get this name wrong, but the company in Racine or Kenosha that does restoration products, is it Restoration Building Products that has the vapor permeable paints?
The vapor impermeable paint?
No, permeable. There's a company in Wisconsin, and Tom, I'm going to have to look it up when I get home, so I have it for the next program. But there is a company in Racine that makes vapor permeable high perm paints for historic buildings. So in other words, if you strip the exterior, you can use their exterior paint, and they probably make an interior paint as well. I'm sorry I can't come up with the name.
Restoration Finishes? No.
When you come up with that, John, we can put it up on the Facebook page.
I will do that. I will look that up, and we will get it up on the Facebook page, Tom, so that you can access that and check with them.
All right. Thanks for that call, Tom. And let's go next to Mark in Howard. Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick question. We built a home in 2001, and in the garage, the cement floor in the garage is all slanted to the center as if there would have been a drain there. However, there isn't a drain there. And therefore, in the wintertime, we get a lot of practice with a squeegee. And I'm wondering how complicated, or perhaps better question is, you know, what would be the most cost-effective method to resolving lack of a drain in the center of this garage.
All right.
Mark, let me ask you a question. Are there Is there a crack system in this garage, or is the floor in good condition?
No, the floor is in great condition, and you know, it's slanted as if it's perfectly designed to have something in the center, but that's exactly where all the water runs very effectively.
I wonder if it's possible that there's a drain underneath there that they poured in and forgot to...
I think what you need is let's start with a light hammer, Mark, and let's do some tapping.
Mm-hmm.
And if we find sort of a hollow sound right sort of in the middle of that declivity, if that's a word...
Good enough. Spell it.
Let's do a little chipping at the concrete. It's possible that there is a drain down there, and you're going to take it off in some concrete, and you'll find some duct tape over a pipe.
It's not unusual for a contractor to go to just... You know, forget about it.
These things happen all the time. So I think I would start with that. But otherwise, I have not found any leveler that works in a garage because of the salt mm-hmm. and the water that comes off the car. So then you're looking at saw cutting and replacing, wouldn't you think, Ken?
Yeah, I mean, you could try.
Is there a way for us to put a drain there that doesn't require, I mean, tearing out everything?
Yes, there is. You can put a French drain in. Those are still allowable. So what you would need to do is you'd need to cut a hole in the floor. Maybe you can get away with a foot. Use a post-hole digger to get down as far as you possibly can. Then pack that hole with washed stone. The diameter of the stone should be half inch to inch and a half because that gives you a 40% airspace or water space. And then get a cover to put over the top of that, and that should take care of that water.
What makes a drain a French drain?
I don't know. Evidently, it was invented by the French.
French person.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And they're very effective in a lot of situations like this or in window wells. You know, so they're basically it's a big trash can filled with stone and holes all over it. Water fills in and then slowly leaches out into the.
And, Mark, you can actually calculate how much water it would hold by just taking 40% of the volume of whatever pipe whatever hole you make down there. So if you have 2 gallons of water, it comes off, you can actually design it yourself.
But start with tapping to see if... I mean,
start with tapping in case it's already there.
Rushing. Okay. Maybe they didn't. Oh, interesting. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for that call. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. We are talking with Ken Adams and John Freiberger about home improvement and repair. And we've been talking quite a bit about stucco, and Bill in Elm Grove has a question on that topic. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. I have a question for the gentleman. We have a home in Florida that's stucco, built in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, are they built differently down there, or it's a concrete block and stucco?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is what's the substrate? It's concrete block.
Concrete block, stucco, and then I'm interested in what kind of paint that we should use, a water-based paint or what?
Well, these are good questions. First of all, are you having problems with the stucco?
There are just one area of some cracking, but I've talked to neighbors who've had it, and they say, well, when they paint it, they know how to patch it and then paint over it. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, there are paints that you can use. There's also different patches. Are you trying to change the color of the wall, or is it some?
No, we wouldn't change the color much at all. I'm just wondering if we haven't had any other problem other than I just want to know what to use to paint the. It's about time to paint the house.
Unless you think that the stucco really needs to be painted, if it hasn't been painted before, maybe you could just get away with a crack repair with the proper materials and stucco. I mean, what do you think, John?
Yeah. Bill, the house has never been painted before, is that correct?
Just when it was new, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it probably has a stucco on it that has the color mixed right into the stucco, doesn't it?
I don't know, because we didn't buy it new. We bought a year old.
Oh, okay. Well, you may want to find out whether there's already paint on it. If there isn't paint on it, then you have various options for paint, including silicate-based paints, and you can look at those up online. They, in many cases, perform much better than do latex paints because they actually chemically bond to your existing stucco. What part of Florida are you in, Bill?
We're at the 5 miles northwest of Orlando, so we're inland. It's dry in the winter, but it's, of course, it's damp in the summer.
Okay, yes. I would check with a couple of the local contractors and the painting contractors there, have them come out, have them discuss what is on there now with you and their ideas. Talk to at least three people. One of them is going to have an obviously higher IQ than the rest of them and seems more trustworthy. Check the references, but get some advice from the people down there.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help, gentlemen.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for that call. And we had a caller who wanted to know whether she can use caulk to repair stucco cracks. The cracks are below a window, or should she call a contractor?
Most of the caulks that are used in to repair stucco in the field are not properly used. Mm. You can use certain polyurethane caulks where stucco meets wood, like around window trim, where it meets flashing. But in the field, if it's in the field, there's special ways to make caulking that works for that use. Otherwise, it'll stand out. I'm not sure where her crack is. So,
just like below a window. But
yeah, do you know any formulas for? I mean, it's a little tricky because you've got to match the colors and you match and the texture and the sheen and everything.
Yes, I do have. I have a lot of formulas, yeah. But without seeing the house, it's pretty difficult.
Right.
But it sounded from her email or from her message that it was at a window, in which case one wants to go online and just Google caulk and bond break. Because we want to make sure this gets caulked correctly. Mm-hmm. If there is an open seam there, which one hopes there is, then one can get a little bit of foam rod in there, do a nice caulk job, and that caulk job should last 20 years if it's done with a good material.
We also have to be careful about filling in any weep holes or weeping, what's it, weep screed, is that what they're called?
Weep screeds onto the windows. Mm-hmm.
Because there are holes, especially in the later technologies, there are little weep holes that are put in behind the stucco to allow moisture, any moisture that might build up, to find its way out. It's done with brickwork too and such, and we also do it when we do rain screen systems. You've probably heard us talking about that over the years on regular clapboard siding and such.
We also had an email from Jeremy. How do you repair woodpecker holes in a stucco home? They seem to really like my stucco.
Really? That's rare.
I have a funny feeling this is actually exterior insulation finish system and not stucco. And what's nice about exterior insulation system, if you're a bird, is once you get through that thin acrylic coating, you've got this wonderful soft material in which to nest. Mm. So I rather expect that this is actually an exterior insulation finish system.
EFIS.
And you're going to need an EFIS contractor to do the patching. Most of them have colors that are particular to the various manufacturers, so you have to find out who the manufacturer was, and it can be completely patched. They can use, however, a heavier mesh than was on the house originally, which will maybe dissuade the woodpecker a bit.
Sometimes when woodpeckers go through EFIS, it's because there's moisture behind the EFIS somewhere, and the moisture is attracted to them. So If they get a hole, they go into the hole. There's moisture can come in. Then they go to another hole further down because the moisture has found its way in, and they think there might be some insects in there.
So maybe they can set up a bird bath instead.
Encourage the birds. Yeah.
We also had a question. Let me find it here. Karen in Whitewater asked, we have a stucco-covered foundation that is chipping. It was built in 2002. They're interested in covering the area with stone, and Karen wonders if they need to remove the stucco first.
That's probably an EFIS-type system, too. There's another product that's not quite like EFIS, and what it is you put the insulation board on the outside of the building, and then you paint on this material that's a cementitious coat. It's sort of like EFIS light. Mm-hmm. And that is very subject to easily being damaged by bumping into it with a bicycle, mm-hmm. a lawnmower, a car, certainly. So if that's the kind of issue she's got, that could be repaired, but you'd want to do something like John had mentioned before, is put a heavier mesh or put a mesh, or there might not be anything on there.
Okay.
And then that could be either graveled I don't know what else you would do with that.
Because she says they're interested in covering it with stone.
Yeah.
So could you put that over the stucco or the ephes?
I don't think so.
I don't think, yeah.
So take it off.
The problem that we have with these foam insulations on the foundations is they're not well adhered. In fact, in many cases, and what Karen should check for is to see whether simply the soil movement has pulled the foam down. Very frequently, we'll find a half inch to sometimes a 2-inch gap up at the top of the wall that used to be foam covered. So if they do need to recover this with an EIFS mesh and concrete product, they should make sure they don't have any gaps and make sure it's a full job. So they need to talk to a local EIFS contractor to do that correctly. But if they put stone on it, it's almost certain to fail.
We are talking about home improvement and repair with Ken Adams, owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison, and John Freiberger, who is a Wisconsin-registered home inspector who specializes in the evaluation of older structures. He's the founder of Freiberger & Associates in Fitchburg. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, we are talking home improvement and repair with Ken Adams and John Freiberger. And let's go back to the phones, and Ron in Birchwood is up next. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I did have a question, but a previous caller had the same question, and you answered it, but I do have a couple of comments about problems with stucco.
Sure.
Not far from where I live, within a few miles, is a luxury condominium complex built about 10 to 12 years ago. The condos were, I think, $400,000 and up. And now a couple of years ago, they found that they have the moisture problem that you were speaking about. And it looks like it'll cost, I think the estimate was somewhere between $6 and $13 million to repair. And they don't know how much it will cost until they pull it off and find out the extent of the damage.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was built by a well-respected commercial builder. And he was hired by a well-respected and very successful developer. But now we're at the point where it's just a lot of finger-pointing going on, and the only people that have a smile on their face are the attorneys for both sides.
That's sad to laugh about it, but that's really the way it is. And I'm assuming it's an EIFS system in that, you know, like in most construction projects, you're only as good as the people out in the field doing the work. And if they're not properly trained or if they're cutting corners for whatever reason, boy, I'll tell you, it looks, I mean, you're obviously right. I mean, the expense is just outrageous.
And, you know, we've been talking a lot about individual homes, but when you've got a whole development like that of those really high price, high ticket item homes like Ron is talking about, that can really run up quickly, can it, John?
It can, especially if you have structural damage. And some of these houses that we're finding, now, the house I'm working on right now is 2x6 walls. But what if you have a 2x4 wall and half of the wood is gone? You end up reframing these buildings. So that it really can be terrible. And anyone who is purchasing a house with the exterior insulation finish system that was done from the 1980s even to today, do not hire just a home inspector, but hire a home inspector who also has the exterior insulation finish system inspector certification. Because we're working on a second house right now that the local home inspector said it all looks fine. Well, $150,000 later, it will look fine.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thanks for that call, Ron. And let's go to Jeff in Suamico. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. All your talk about exterior insulation systems has got me thinking. We have a home that was built in the mid-70s, a ranch home, and the previous owner installed half-log siding about 14 years ago. He did a horrible job, and I used to do some contracting, so I started removing the siding one wall at a time, and the Tyvek that he had put on, I think he probably left exposed for a long time because it just is rotten and falls apart, so the two walls that I've done, I installed the quarter-inch fan-fold foam and sealed everything up and then painted my siding and put it back up and caulked it and detailed it. I'm wondering if I'm causing any kind of a potential moisture problem with that fan-fold foam. The half-log siding is back-primed and everything, and so I'm wondering if I'm making a problem for myself.
All right.
Well, the back-priming maybe what is going to save you. The Tyvek probably was not left exposed. What happened is that the acids and the sugars in the wood actually destroyed it. And we have several studies going on right now with Tyvek that has had wood in contact, and we're finding that the Tyvek is not doing very well.
Hmm.
So it is any kind of moisture that is coming through can cause acids and sugars in the wood to move into the Tyvek and simply destroy the Tyvek. So the back priming certainly is going to help because it's going to reduce that. But I think, as Ken and I always say, if you're putting up wood siding and there's foam back there, you really want to have some sort of rain screen. You want to have some sort of ventilation in back. If you do that on the other walls, spacing it out, say, 3/4 of an inch, then that log siding should stay stable just about forever. Any moisture that's working out through those walls. A house built in 1970s, Jeff, probably does not have a vapor barrier on the interior. It probably also is relatively leaky. So you are going to continually get moisture being driven through those walls. And when it hits the backside of those logs, even though they're primed, eventually we could have some problems. I know it's not logs. It's the half log or the sawn log look siding. So consider on the rest of it to go to a rain screen system.
Ken, is there anything you would add?
No, there's a lot of secondary information on rain screen systems online. A great resource would be to look at what's it called now? It used to be the New England Journal of Light Construction. I think it's just called the Journal of Light Construction. They have several articles about how you can do a rain screen system. Simple, easy to read, and that would be a good place to start. I think Fine Belt Home Building has some, too.
It does, and the Forest Products Laboratory here in Madison also has a consumer website, and I believe you can download information there on rain screen systems as well.
All right. Good luck with that, Jeff. And we had a picture posted on Facebook with a question from Laura. She says, our house was built with 6-inch walls filled with spray foam insulation. As a result, we've got winter moisture issues and run dehumidifiers to deal with it, but only get the house down to 50% humidity. Any tips for what to do so that we can keep paint on the wall at the windows?
Yes. There's two things to do. First is determine why your house is so wet. Go to the University of Minnesota Cold Climate Housing website and download the sources of interior moisture. It's a real handy thing. I mean, if you've got a 20-pound dog, it'll tell you how many pints of moisture that dog breathes into the air each day. And see if you can start reducing the amount of moisture that's being put into the air. Number two, as Joe always says, the solution to pollution is dilution. So you're going to have to get some dry air into that house. So a heat recovery vent system, also called air-to-air heat exchanger, is probably a $3,000 investment that you're going to want to make. The nice thing about it is you can bring in nice dry air in the winter, but the heat exchanger is going to warm that air, so you're not going to have to heat it as much. Plus, if you have CO, CO2, formaldehyde, any other fumes inside the house, it's going to raise your indoor air quality in general. So take a look at that. Any decent contractor should be able to do, a HVAC contractor should be able to install one for you. There's lots of information online regarding heat recovery vent systems as well.
All right. Good luck with that, Laura. And let's go back to the phones. And Pete in La Crosse is up next. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Hello. So I have a question. My father was a World War II veteran. He came back and he built a building, a concrete building for a business. And then he later expanded that to our house. It's all concrete block. And he put, we always called it plaster, but it's probably stucco then, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, outside, you mean?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't had any problem with it at all. I think one time he painted it, and one time he did a little patch job. But it's a spectacular-looking home. It's large, and it's bright white. And my question is, why don't more people build like that? at all.
Well, I know Jen will have something to say about this, but just to start with, first of all, you're working with a cement block building, and you're putting stucco on the outside, and you can apply it directly to the masonry, and that's a very, very good way of installing stucco. It's a very stable way of installing it. The other thing, going back to the first statement you made, stucco and plaster are used quite often interchangeably.
The terms,
yes. Yeah. So some people will say plaster, exterior plaster, interior stucco. So it's usually the same, or something that's been modified for its application. More people don't do it because now it's more expensive than than before. So if most houses are being built with either a brick facade or a face brick on part of the house, wood siding or vinyl on the other side on the rest of it, and you don't see as much stucco because it's fairly expensive, with the exception of EIFS. EIFS is fairly inexpensive, and it does add insulation value to the house. Do you want to add some more questions?
Well, we certainly do still see it in the warmer climates, like Bill's house down there in north of Orlando. So where we do have cement block or tip-up walls or any other type of poured construction, it still is a very widely used product. And there are certainly are some systems, such as the insulated foundation units, where you can then apply an EIFS-type system directly over that foam, which work spectacularly well. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I do like to see when we are going over a concrete masonry unit or concrete block building is to make sure that we put mesh or lath in back, because those buildings do crack. Mm-hmm, the walls are not, they're very, very strong in compression, but they do crack. We don't want those cracks to come out through the stucco. So we want to have this crack barrier, basically, to which the stucco is adhered. So the wall can structurally move in back of it, but never telegraph that movement through the exterior surface. So I think stucco is a wonderful product. We still specify it on some buildings. Mm. We also have a system where we completely back drain it. And with those back drain systems, I think, as I said earlier, we can pretty much guarantee they're going to last at least 100 years.
Great. Thanks for that call, Peter. And let's go to Larry in Pembine next. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Good. I got to fit this in. I'm a bricklayer, a brick mason, have been for the last 30 years. The reason why a lot of these EIFS systems and all these other new technology for the fake masonry and all this other stuff, the cultured stone and what have you, is because basically I'm involved with a dying trade. With that said, I'm just wondering what the ratio, when you mention a lime-based stucco, do you mean that the lime is in greater proportion to the Portland cement? Or what does that mean? You're talking about turn-of-the-century lime-based stuccos. What exactly do you mean by that?
The further you go back, Larry, the more lime you're going to have. By the time you get into the 1920s, usually the lime is down to about 15%. But that 15% is really important as far as not making that wall terribly hard and brittle. But if you go way back, you get into the late 1700s, early 1800s, you basically find that it's all lime. So when you're looking at a house, just like when you're looking at some of these old brick houses that were built in 1890 with soft brick and soft mortar, you've got to sort of analyze the material so that you can plan your repairs.
I do that accordingly. What I basically do is I'll use a I'll use a type S mortar, but I'll soften it up with sand and lime to take that into consideration, because you're right, there were truly a lot softer mortars used back in the turn of the century. Thank you so much, and I'd like to maybe have you guys toss that idea around about masonry's basically a dying trade on one of your shows.
Well, the other thing, Larry, that you know probably all too well, is that specifications in some of these newer masonry materials are just plain wrong. If you go to the Owens Corning site and look at the material you're supposed to use to adhere these very soft plaster-like fake bricks and fake stone to the wall, it does not specify a soft mortar. And we are finding new house after new house where these thin veneer artificial stones and artificial bricks are simply shattering along any kind of fault line at all in the framing. So there's some real issues with the lack of people who now know how to do stucco work, the lack of people that know how to do masonry. You know, the trades have simply disappeared. And certainly, I think, Ken, you can probably comment on this, the 2007 recession taught a lot of construction people that they needed to retrain and get a different skill. Mm. And now no one really wants to come into it. And we're having a terrible time finding
people. So there
was
attrition of people leaving the trades and not enough new people coming up in the...
Well, every decent mason I know is over 50.
Right.
I don't know any of them that are in their 20s anymore. I mean, it's a sad state, really. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. It's a great skill. Mm-hmm. It's an honorable skill. It's a wonderful skill, and it's a skill that, you know, the results of which last for hundreds of years in some cases. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for, you know, good quality old school masonry.
Yeah. Right. I hope Larry takes on a couple apprentices.
Yeah. There we go. Good luck to you out there.
Thanks for that call, Larry. And we will continue talking with John Freiberger and Ken Adams all the way up until 12:30 after a quick look at the news from NPR and WPR. Ken Adams is the owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. John Freiberger is a Wisconsin registered home inspector specializing in older structures. He's the founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I hope you'll stay with us. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Like many things in life, it can be a little too easy not to pay attention to our home's upkeep until something goes wrong. But inevitably, something needs to be fixed, and we need advice we can rely on. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. So glad you could join us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're lucky to have two pros that know a lot and have a good time sharing their experiences, too. Ken Adams is the owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Great to have you back with us, Ken.
Good to be here.
And John Freiberger is a Wisconsin registered home inspector specializing in older homes, founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. Always a pleasure, John.
Pleased to be here.
Well, let's go right back to the phone, and Paul in Bayfield is up first. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling in regard to a building that I have in Bayfield that's a commercial structure. It was a dairy, co-op dairy, and it's approaching its 100-year birthday. And the building is kind of not very attractive, and wondering about the feasibility of doing a stucco on this building, and if on the type of ceramic block that they built them with would be a problem for an adhesion with the stucco process.
Now, it should be no problem at all, Paul, because you're not going to apply the stucco over the block. If you're using traditional stucco, you're going to attach a wire lath, and that will probably be a bar-type lath. Make sure that they actually put it on horizontally the way they're supposed to. You can take a look at it at, probably the best is the Iowa Lath Company. Yeah, they have a website, and you can take a look at their lath. And then the stucco will adhere to that, not to the glazed ceramic. If you're using exterior insulation finish system, which you also could if you wanted to add insulation, then the foam is going to be adhered with tapcons or something to these same walls. So in neither case will you actually be applying a finish to the glazed block itself. Is the building in just awful condition, Paul?
No, it's not. It's just that it does have some cracking in the face of the building. And
sure.
It's pretty minimal.
It might be repairable, Paul. And what I'm going to suggest to you is that you see if there's any possibility that it might be considered a historic structure in Wisconsin. Because right now, Wisconsin has, you can get a 40% tax credit for the historic restoration, renovation of this building. 20% of that is federal. So that would come off your federal income tax, and you can actually get a check from the federal government. The other would be against Wisconsin tax. You should be able to get information on historic taxes from the State Historic Society of Wisconsin. So just State Historic Society website, take a look at that.
Which is wisconsinhistory.org.
Wisconsinhistory.org. So before you completely modify the building, let's see if perhaps there may be some real significant tax advantages to maintaining it rather than changing it.
Okay. I mean, like I say, the building doesn't have any unusual characteristics other than it's a painted ceramic structure.
Well, I can tell you that the Mount Horeb Dairy, which was built in two parts, one of which is now the Grumpy Troll and another is a woodworking shop, that both parts of that building, unspectacular as they were put on the state register and did get the tax credits. So very often it's simply because the building is important. It's not because it's beautiful. The canning company in Sun Prairie, which was built in 1943, received a national designation as a landmark due to social history and its importance in the war effort. So you never know what you're going to find. You can hire somebody who can evaluate it for you, And you may find that you own a little bit of a diamond in the rough there.
Thanks for that call, Paul. And we'll move from Paul and his dairy to Todd and his cheese factory. Hi, Todd.
Why, hello.
Hi.
This is Todd from Upon.
Yes.
My question for the two gentlemen today is I have an 1883 cheese factory, and back in the days they had all the different portals with the different doors to put the product out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got the field stone, but in the, where those portals were, that's been filled in with block cement blocks. I'd like a uniform surface, and this relates to the stucco topic, in that should I go over with that then with a stucco? The gentlemen talk a lot about the foundation being having to be able to breathe, or if we should use the synthetic materials we were discussing before, and I just kind of want their advice on how to get a uniform surface to the south, and the foundation is about 3 feet thick in fieldstone.
Todd, what's the building used for?
It's actually my primary residence.
Okay. Well, it's always hard when we can't see these. I look forward to the day where we can put everything on Facebook along with the pictures. Again, I think you have either option may work. The problem with the exterior insulation finish system is you've got to be able to get the exterior insulation over a fairly uniform surface. So that could be perhaps a bit of an issue. It can also be a little bit difficult if it's terribly rough to even be able to stucco it. So you're probably going to have to talk to a couple of local contractors. Again, as we just noted to Paul up in Bayfield, I don't know what kind of condition this building is in, but it's possible that this is a historic structure and that perhaps all those places where the concrete block were put in could be opened up and made into windows. As a residence, you can only get a 20% credit rather than a 40% as you can on a commercial building. But you may want to take a look at that as well. And again, wisconsinhistory.org, and then click on homeowner historic tax credits, and you can get some interesting information.
You know, one thing that comes to my mind that I don't know if it'll work for you because, like John said, we can't see the building now. But if you have a very uneven surface and you're trying to go up against, there may be some way to spray on stucco finishes. There are techniques that are used for uneven surfaces or surfaces where you want to tie in different textures. I've seen actually rock formations sticking out of retaining walls that were mostly dirt that were stuccoed, and there's special techniques for that, but it can be done, and you know, something like that may work for you too.
Well, my main concern is with all the discussion we've had about the synthetics is that in my area, I don't know if there's anybody that can really put it on properly. You guys have talked in the past about fieldstone; it'll last forever, but as long as it breathes.
That's correct.
I was listening to the discussion today, and like I said, it's a beautiful home, and that base where those, you know, where they the cheese out or where they put out that raw milk, that's where they put in the concrete block. So it's like you do have an uneven surface, and I was just hoping I could just put lath over the top of that and then a couple of coats of stucco. But perhaps you guys are saying that it actually would probably be harder than that.
I don't know. You could send us a few photographs, and we could take a look at it and maybe give you a little bit better advice, or you can talk to someone local that does some stucco work and may be able to help you out.
Todd, you could send any photos you might have to talk@wpr.org and just say it's for the Larry Mueller Show, and those will get to us, and we'll make sure they get to John and Ken.
Okay, well, wonderful. And if I could just ask real quick then to the gentleman, are they recommending, though, for anybody with fieldstone, if you want to paint the exterior, that it has to be a breathable paint? Am I correct about that?
I would never paint a fieldstone exterior. It simply is going to fail, no matter what you use on it. A silicate-based paint would be best, but I would simply maintain it with the soft mortars. And if you send an email, we can send you recipes and specifications for how that work can be done if you want to give it to a local mason.
Thanks for that call, Todd. And we had an email from Cynthia in Stevens Point. She says, our home has composite siding plus wood gables. We're going to need to re-side it in the next few years. It's a small house. What is your recommendation of what types of siding to use?
This is another one where it would be great to have the photograph to see what style of siding would be appropriate to it. When she talks about composite siding, could that mean masonite, or could that mean...
It could be the old Georgia Pacific smart side or something
smart
like
side,
that.
Something like that, which has a high failure rate, I think.
Yes.
Depending on the style of the house, you know, stucco might work, or you might look at something like a clapboard style siding that is on a rain screen system. There's a lot of options to you depending on what your budget is and you know, how energy efficient you want to make the house. So there again, I think I have inadequate information to give you really good advice.
All right. And caller Nelson asked, can you two talk about using, is it Dryvit on the exterior of a home?
Mm-hmm. Dryvit is one of the brand names of an exterior insulation finish system. They have a pretty decent system for back draining. Their back drain system requires the applicator to use a tooth trowel, which produces ridges. The last hotel, we ended up firing the Dryvit installers because they were absolutely unable to run those ridges straight up and down. They kept going horizontal and blocking off the water. So again, it's a system that requires somebody who really knows what they're doing and somebody who's also doing quality control. My preference is for something that has a true back drain system on it. But Dryvit, if it's installed perfectly, is a much better system than it was 20 years ago and is widely used.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones and Peter in McHenry, Illinois. Hi, Peter.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an exterior covering question for potentially some new construction, a vacation / retirement home on the west side of Michigan. And I want to build about a 1,600 square foot house with kind of a traditional look in that area. There's a lot of kind of shake shingle cottages.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed the shake shingles do require maintenance, longevity sometimes is an issue, things like that. On the property, I have a garage that my grandfather put up some 25 years ago with more of a vinyl siding that's just held up beautifully. And I've seen some of the imitation shake shingle products in like a polypropylene or something like that. And they look very good. And I'm wondering if anyone has experience with how those systems last, because they are somewhat new. And I'm wondering how that would hold up to sun and mm-hmm. you know, heat swings of cold and summer heats of the Midwest and things like that.
All right, let's see what John has to say.
Well, the ones that I'm most familiar with are the sawn cedar artificial shingles panels that are made by the James Hardy Company. And this is a cementous material. The reason when people talk about vacation homes, I often think about fires. And there's really something comforting about having your house surrounded by a rock, which is basically what the Hardy and CertainTeed weatherboards and others have. The big problem that we see with them is that the installers don't follow the installation instructions. So again, you can very easily go to the James Hardy Company, take a look at the products, and download all the installation instructions. I do like to have a rain screen behind them, but it isn't absolutely essential. But it will give you the look that you want. You should have a finish that will last at least 20 years. And as long as it is protected from moisture, you should have a very long life with it. The other thing that you can take a look at, however, is plain old cedar shingles. The problem with cedar shingles is you have to get all vertical grain. You need to pre-finish them. But if you pre-finish them and put them up, I would say you can get at least 20 years before you'd have to apply any other finish to it, but it does not have that nice fire resistance that you have for a home where you may not be there all of the time.
Mm-hmm. If you do like the idea of cedar, you can look at the Shakertown website. I've had some very good luck with Shakertown. They make some panels, but they also have free, single piece applications, and that's where I would look. You know what I'm talking about, John, not the panels that you can buy panels with a siding glued onto it.
Right.
And that's not what I'm talking about.
No, those ones we want to avoid those.
Right. But there are other products that when you buy just the single shingles, you can buy fish scale, you can buy half round, you can buy all kinds of things that will look really, really good and be vertical grain and You know, as long as you finished all four sides, or all six sides, basically, you're fine.
And there's a very good company in eastern Canada, the name of which, again, escapes me, but if you email in, we can tell you, that does a very good job on pre-finished Canadian white cedar shingles.
Oh, well, see, well, white cedar really holds up well to the weather.
Yes, it does. A lot of these New England homes that we see that are absolutely ancient and haven't been painted for 100 years are old growth white cedar.
Yeah, that's great stuff.
And they
stuff.
Look lovely, too.
They do.
And actually, Lee in Green Bay had a question similar to Peter in McHenry, wondering about best siding to put on a northern cabin in a wooded area. Is there anything different that you would say?
I would say in a wooded area, I really like this idea of the cement siding. And that is simply a product that if there is a grass fire or a brush fire, you are not going to lose your house. There is actually, Joe Stillbrick from Building Science has done a really nice article on building cabins in woods, even with vented roof systems, where the house is completely, exterior is completely non-combustible. That can be found in the ASHRAE journal. I don't know which issue, but
and
again,
ASHRAE stands for
American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers, of which I'm
a
member.
And when you say cementous, is that like cement board? Is that what we're talking
about?
That
is correct.
Okay, great. So hopefully that will help Lee out. Let's go next to Maquanago and Peter. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I have done a lot of work around the house, roofing, that sort of thing. I'm installing my first fence, and I'm getting a lot of conflicting information online about things like frost depth.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was 42 inches. I'm seeing 48, and if that's the case, if it's a 6-foot privacy fence, I need to go with 12-foot 4x4s as opposed to 10-foot, so it's a fairly significant cost upgrade.
Sure.
The other question is what to bury those fence posts in. Should it be concrete, which was always the big thing, but now I'm reading you shouldn't because it'll rot the pressure-treated wood quicker, and now they're advising just using gravel. And if you do gravel, should you be using some kind of a landscaping fabric around it so that the dirt doesn't actually get into the gravel, negating the purpose of the gravel, which is drainage.
Okay. All right. Let's see what Ken has to say.
Well, first of all, is this fence going to be tied to the house? Is it going to be freestanding?
It's going to be tied to the house in one spot. And
okay. Then you'll want to keep it to the frost line because otherwise it'll be moving at different rates. So you're in Maquanago, 42, 48 inches. I mean, if you're digging 42, you can dig another couple inches and you'll be fine. What we normally do with fence posts in the ground is we'll throw some sand or some pea gravel on the bottom, at least 4 or 5 inches, set the post in place, and then for added security, then we'll pour around it. And we find I've torn up some of the work that I've done 20 years ago, and it's still in pretty good shape. The type of material you use is also important. If you can't just use any old treated lumber, you have to use something that's rated for ground use. If you're using cedar, I would go to Alaskan yellow cedar rather than Western red cedar. I think it's going to hold up better over time. So, you know, those are the basic things. I don't think that, what am I trying to say? This, it's not really going to be as critical that you bury the thing in concrete if there's not going to be any weight on it. So you could actually set it on the ground and backfill with dirt too, if or sand if you wanted to allow moisture to move away from it and allow it to sort of move with the seasons.
I think that's really good advice, yeah. Ken. If you do set it in concrete, think of all the rocks that come out of the ground every spring because of the frost motion in Wisconsin. If you put concrete around your fence, you're basically putting a big rock around your fence, and the frost is going to have a tendency, if it does get under it, to raise that towards the surface. So you're probably actually better with just a plain dirt fill, and I think that your idea on having the pea gravel down in the bottom is brilliant because that does really give you the drainage you want. So you're looking at a lot less expense putting that pea gravel in and just backfilling with soil than putting concrete around it.
All right. Thanks for that call, Peter. We had an email from, let me get to the right place here. we have an email from Marla in Fitchburg. She says, our 10-year-old home is mostly cedar-sided with EIFS accents, so that's the exterior insulation finish systems, and a north-facing wall. The EIFS has developed streaks under the windows, perhaps from mold and mildew. Is there a way to safely clean that from the EIFS surface?
Ooh, that's a potential problem. Sometimes when you get mold in the surface, it's actually growing underneath the surface.
That's correct. Very, very frequently what this is with actually EIFS. The wood sheathing of the home that's decaying. I think that what you need to do is you need to get an EIFS inspector out to look at this first. They will look at that with moisture probes to see if there are any issues there. But inspect it first, because if problems are developing, you really want to get those cured before the walls go.
ASAP for the EFIS or whatever. No, but
you're doing so well there, Ken, for a second. But so what it sounds like what you're saying is that this actually might not be an exterior problem. It might be an interior problem making its way out to the exterior.
This may be evidence of a significant issue, and the house really should be inspected. It sounds like this house was built during a period before we really had decent detailing, and people did not realize the kind of problems that were going to develop with the houses.
As you could probably tell, John and I are both a little head shy about EIFS applications, because a lot of times it could look great until the damage is done, because the damage is happening behind the surface.
Right. And you're only seeing it at that last
critical
stage.
I mean, it's like the boat that is all prettily painted and you put your finger right through the hull because it's completely rotten. It's that kind of thing, really.
Yeah. Well, we've talked a lot about stucco and similar coverings, and just ending with a comment from Gail on Facebook. I grew up in a stucco house that was built in the mid-1800s. The stucco is gray and in very good shape right up to this day. It also has 2-foot-thick walls. It was a rude awakening when I moved out of that house and there were no windows sills to display all the good stuff. So thanks for that comment, Gail. And thank you guys for joining us today. It's always a pleasure, and I always learn a whole lot. Ken Adams, owner of Adams Design Construction in Madison. Thanks as always, Ken.
Thank you. It's great to see you.
And John Freiberger, Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializing in the evaluation of older structures. What does older mean for you, John?
Generally, about 1929, I tend to saddle my partners with what we call the new houses, the stuff built in the 30s and thereafter.
All right.
But it's a whole separate area.
And he's the founder of Freiberger and Associates in Fitchburg. John, always a pleasure.
It was great to be here again.
And they will be back in a couple months or so to educate us on other things. Tomorrow at 11, it's time for Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She'll share what the connection is between maple seedlings and box elder bugs, and she'll tell us what fungal diseases to watch out for after a cold, wet spring, which we certainly had. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. So glad you could join us. Thanks to Carl Christensen for on-air production. I hope you'll stay tuned. Lots more ahead on the Ideas Network.
On Central Time, we keep you up to date on the latest news.
When news got going, the promise was if you inform the citizenry, then people will be able to make the right decisions and the world will flourish.
Back in October when the government shut down, there were sexually transmitted diseases that had a better approval rating than Congress, literally.
We talk with newsmakers, experts, and reporters and ask you to weigh in.
It's Central Time, weekday afternoons from 3 until 6.
Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy's Home Performance with Energy Star program, rewarding and helping homeowners save on energy bills through air sealing and insulation home improvements. More at focusonenergy.com/homeperformance. Support also comes from the Madison Community Foundation, presenting Dan Rather on Community and Philanthropy for the MCF Annual Dinner, June 24th at the Monona Terrace. Details and tickets at Madison Community.